Again, we come back. Some of you wrote to me this week, and folks are kind of bashful about one of the reasons that lots of folks don't like to teach an auditorium class is because it's hard to get comments. And some of you were a little bashful about saying what we began the class with last time about what practical benefit has it been and is it to you to realize that God makes us righteous as a gift, imputed righteousness rather than by earned. And some of you wrote some really neat things and sent them to me, and I really appreciate them. To be honest with you, I have for the last few years kept a little folder of comments, and so I've just kind of collected some of those. It's kind of an encouragement to me, for one thing, to go back and read some of the very thoughtful things that you have to say about what it means to you to come to this realization. I've tried to make it obvious some of the things that it has meant to me and does mean to me over the years. In a nutshell, is why I'm preaching what we're talking about, and the fact that for the first time in my life, I really have a confidence about going to heaven. And I mean, I knew the words. I knew to say it. I knew when somebody asked you if you died tonight, do you know that you'd go to heaven? I knew to say yes. You know, I knew it after a while. Started out just like most of us did, said, well, I hope so, I hope so. But then after a while, you know, the preacher beat us over the head enough that we quit saying, I hope so. And so we said, yes, I do. But sometimes we say things that it takes a little while for us to catch up to. Yes, sir. Continue in that circumstance. Well, to be real honest with you, whenever we get back and make an application of that, I'm assuming that particular, there was a tree of knowledge of good and evil, and there was a tree of the two trees that really were highlighted there. And my understanding is that tree of life evidently had to do with their physical life, yes. That's right. And that's right. That's my understanding. And physical death would also be a consequence of that. And then when we get to Revelation, you know, we're going to find out a little bit later here. And every time I say Revelation, Elton, I see him perk up. But we're going to see the tree of life back there again. So that evidently is going to be a source of our continued existence that way. And it had access to it. Yeah, they wouldn't have had a way out of this mess. Yeah, I mean, that's my understanding. And you know, you think about our attitude about death as a Christian is completely different than the world's attitude, because it's our way out of this veil of toil and sin, you know. Yeah, that's right. And so there's reason for rejoicing when a Christian victoriously lives this life, and it gets to get on the train, gets his ticket punched. Yeah, that's my understanding. Yes, sir. Okay, when we say everything was in God's plan, not everything that happens in this world is what God wants to happen. The fact that God can know something and then to say he planned it are two different things. He didn't plan that man sinned. He knew that they were going to, but he didn't plan it. But he did some planning in light of what he knew, that planning being providing a Savior. And so if we say that God planned for man to sin, I don't find in my theology that God planned for man to sin. He knew they were going to. And that's hard for us to separate. I've struggled with that some myself, not as much as some people that I've been close to, that they just could not accept that God knew something and didn't do something about it. Now, you know, we're over my pay grade here, what God knows and does and so forth, but I'm convinced that, why did he put it there? Why did he put what there? The tree? Well, I'm going to have to speculate a little bit because I don't know for sure, okay? But I think God is glorified by man's voluntary submission to his will. And if you don't have the option of not doing that, then you can't truly glorify God. He would have had to create us as robots where we didn't have a choice. That's kind of my understanding of it. And that's, you know, we're in real deep water right there, you know, because I don't, you know, I'm having to give you some conclusions of my own reasoning and speculation and so forth. But that's the best I can do with that. I'm convinced that God knew because the Bible, Revelation, we talk about the Lamb that was slain before the foundation of the earth. And so God knew what was going to happen, and he started making provision. He had a plan in mind. You know, does God know, I don't know if I want to go here or not, but does God know what was going to happen yesterday with this, you know, I don't even know the details of what happened, but these folks that got killed, did God know that that was going to happen? My answer is yes. If you want to get into, could God have stopped it? I'm going to assume, yes, he could have. There's also a side of this that we need to realize. If sin did not have really serious consequences, we would never know how serious it was. And so God causes / allows, whichever of those fits your theology better, really difficult things to happen in this world when man transgresses, when man sins. Death is one of those. And when we stand over the coffin of somebody that we love, and our heart is just ripped in two, we need to hate sin because of what sin has done. When somebody in our family, when a home is broken, when a child is abused, when somebody is killed, when these difficulties happen in life, our heart needs to be ripped with the seriousness of sin. And God caused, in some cases, there to be some really serious consequences to sin so that we would know. This is a big deal. You know, if I do something wrong, I want to say, well, it's not really that big a deal. Oh, yeah, it is a big deal. I mean, people die because of it. You know, whenever I sin, I die. God, I need to know that. And if God didn't put his hand behind the back of my head and put my face in it and just keep doing that, then I would forget how big a deal it is. And I would think, well, I'm okay, you're okay. And so these consequences that he allows are really, if you get down to it, the only hope that we've ever had is that God would allow us to suffer the consequences of sin to some degree. Now, if we've suffered the full consequences, we'd just be gone. And so by his mercy, we don't have to suffer the full consequences, but there are still consequences we see of sin in this world. Yes, sir. I think that is certainly one of the consequences of it, yes. I think it is. Okay, his observation was, what happened yesterday, we believe that God knows, we believe that God could have stopped it, and so are we saying that God allowed that to happen so that we'll hate sin even more? And I'm saying, I will say to you, okay, again, I'm over my pay grade here, okay? I can't tell you. I'm not the definitive answer to this, but I will say as a response to that, yes, at least in part, that when these difficulties, these really serious consequences happen in life, it pulls us up short, and we start thinking about things we wouldn't think of otherwise. We start thinking about spiritual things, don't we? That's one of the benefits of going to a funeral. You're jerked away from your everyday life and forced to think about some things that most people don't want to think about. And we need to think about. We need to settle those things in our life. And so the difficulties that come in life cause us to reflect on our own life and say, hey, you know, if things go the way that they have gone, as far as I know, then one day I'm going to be laying there, you know, and I need to get myself ready to be laying there. Somebody had something over here. Yes, sir. A big difference, isn't it? That's right. That's right. Yeah. It's just the end of the introduction, isn't it? And I agree with you. I've been in discussion with people who said, hey, if it wasn't for the afterlife, I'd just go out here and do whatever. But, you know, if a person lives a little while and you see the consequences, even physically, of sin and how it devastates families and, you know, brings pain and so forth, then I'm with you. I'd want to be a Christian even if there wasn't that promise of eternal security. Yes, ma'am. And you know, that's the nature of faith, isn't it? I mean, that's we accept that because he's given us every reason to trust him. I mean, he's come through everything he said so far. So even if I don't understand this, why would I not accept it? On what basis would I decide, I don't believe he's going to come through on this deal, you know? I don't believe this is the right thing to do. Our faith, and by the way, we all live by, to some degree, I don't care if you're a Christian, if you're not, I do care, but regardless of whether you're a Christian or not a Christian, you operate by faith to some degree, okay? And people just kind of throw that on Christians. I mean, a person who's not a Christian operates on faith. That's the interesting thing within itself. By the way, I want to apologize for saying that people don't like to teach class because, okay, never mind. Yes, ma'am. And because we have allowed him to have that reign in our life, hadn't he? That's right. That's right. That's right. Yeah. And that's right. And when we get to that point, I traveled with somebody earlier in my life, a guy that I will say without any reservation had much more faith than I did at that point in my life. And we would be somewhere in some horrible place, you know, and our plane would be delayed, and I was just chomping at the bits to get where I was trying to go and just was upset and pacing the floor, you know, waiting for the next, you know, got to get these details worked out. And he just had this calmness about him, and he said, you know what, if we're delayed, there might be a really good reason. There might be somebody here we need to talk to about Jesus. And he began to look for that. And that made a difference in my life. You know, I'm not saying that I'm not impatient sometimes when I should be patient now, but he helped me. He helped me see that I'm not in control. And even when I think I'm in control, I'm not in control. And that's okay. And when it gets to the point that you can honestly say that's okay, that marks a change in your life, because it used to not be okay. If I couldn't control it, it wasn't okay. So, you know, that's... Yes, sir. I'm sorry. You've been there a long time waiting. Go ahead.
All the providence of God and the foreknowledge of God, in some ways, I mean, look how often we are compared to children. We are God's children. And we know as adults things that our children are going to do, and we know they're not supposed to do them. And we tell them, don't do those things, and yet we know that they're going to do them anyway. Just like God knows what his children are going to do. He doesn't want us to do them, but he knows we're going to do them anyway. So he lets and has a way out for us. Because he's even smarter than we are. When our kids, we know they're going to do something stupid, but we don't know what they're going to do sometimes. But God knows what we're going to do and has made a way out.
Yeah.
And has continually left us this way. Choose the right path. Choose what he tries to get us to, but he knows that we're not always going to make those decisions. So he has given us the foreknowledge, or he has the foreknowledge, and has ways out all the way down the line.
And you know, there are times, even with our own children, that we allow them when we've told them that they clearly understand, and they disobey. Sometimes we allow them to taste a little of the consequences. Now, we don't want consequences to come that's going to kill them.
Right.
We don't want it to wipe them out, but we let them taste a little of it, don't we? So that we can come back and we can say, now, you know, one of the sweetest things in life is to be able to say, "I told you so." Okay, right? You know, and so you can come back and say, "I told you that this was going to happen when you did this. Now, will you listen to me?" Well, they won't completely, but they will listen to you a little more than they did before, okay? And that you keep working at. Yes, sir. Exactly. I'll get right back to you in a second. Just right here. Okay, you talk as loud as you can talk. You know, I don't have an answer to your question. I mean, your question is within itself a really good observation. If I have to give you a response to your question, I would say because we don't want the blame, first of all. I want to blame somebody else, just like in the garden. It's the woman that you gave to me. Who was he ultimately blaming? He was blaming God, wasn't he? You gave this woman to me. She's the one that persuaded me to do this, and so it's your fault, God, that this happened. Well, we've done that since that time. And all of why, I don't know, but it starts with, number one, I don't want the responsibility for what I'm doing wrong. I want to blame somebody else. Now, why do we choose God as opposed to Satan? Maybe because we feel like God could have done something and he didn't do something. And we don't understand why he didn't do something. We don't expect anything good from Satan. You know, so what good does it do to blame him? He is due the blame, but we don't do anything for ourselves. We don't make ourselves feel any better. You know, Flip Wilson used to say, what? Devil made me do it. You know, well, we all laughed about that. Those of us who are over 30 years old laughed about it. But anyway, but I don't completely know all the psychology of why, except we just seem to get more pleasure out of blaming God than we do the devil. We don't get any satisfaction out of blaming the devil. Yes, ma'am. And that's a faith statement for us, isn't it? That's our goal to do.
Well, I'm just going to say that we blame God because we expect God not to let it happen to us. Yeah. And that's the psychology behind it, to me.
Yeah.
If something happens, we blame God because we feel God should have prevented it.
Yeah.
And that's the foot blame.
Yeah, and we feel like that what happened was a lot, the consequences were a lot worse than what our actions deserve. And we don't know what we're talking about because the consequences should be much worse than what happened. Yeah, yeah, it makes us feel better about ourselves, doesn't it? Are we studying Romans?
I'm sorry, I asked a lot of questions.
I got you, brother. Yeah, that's good. I appreciate all the comments. I do. And I don't mind stopping occasionally like that. Y'all are getting like my Thursday morning class. It's supposed to be an Old Testament survey, and we've been going for 2 years, and we're still in Deuteronomy. So we're not surveying. Right? And I used to have a teacher that when we got a little bit, tired of what he was teaching, we would ask him a question. He was a missionary in Africa for 15 years. And so we all knew it. We'd look at one another and wink and somebody would ask a question about something in Africa, and we could all put our pens and stuff down and prop our feet up because he's going to tell stories about Africa from then on, you know. So maybe you're learning about me. So anyway, I don't know. But we ended 3:20. We didn't end, but the chapter 3, verse 28 is one of those statements, again, that everything has been coming to 1:18 to 3:20 has been coming to the conclusion that we're not going to be able to save ourselves by law. And then 3:21 through 27 is just a real concise, condensed lesson about justification is by grace through faith. It is a gift of God, not of works, etc. Just real concentrated. And then he draws a conclusion or a summary in verse 28. We maintain that a man is justified by faith apart from observing law. The article D is not there. By observing law. And if you haven't highlighted, underlined, circled, or somehow designated that phrase, you need to do that. Because that's the conclusion. And chapter 4 now is going to give evidence of that. I would say it's going to prove it, but I've been in enough arguments about what constitutes proof that I don't use prove as often as I do give evidence. And here's, I'll take another little run right here and explain that to you. What proves something to one person doesn't prove it to another person. And so when I say to you, I'm going to prove this to you, well, I might or I might not. If I were to give evidence to this audience, there would be some people who would accept that as conclusive proof. There would be others who said, I'm not convinced yet. I need some more, okay? So that puts me as a teacher, that puts you as a Christian in a position where you need to understand something. You can take a lot of pressure off of your life by realizing it's not your responsibility to prove something to somebody. There are some people that you could pile evidence up 25 miles high and you're still not going to prove it to them because they got their own reason for not wanting it to be true. And you're not going to prove it to them. You with me? And so if it is your responsibility, if God gave you the responsibility of proving this to somebody, and that person is not going to accept it regardless of how much evidence you give, then you're really going to have a frustrating life, aren't you? And you're going to end up a big flop. But if it is your responsibility to give evidence to the very best of your ability with the right attitude, and then it's that person's responsibility whether or not it proves it, how they respond is not your responsibility. It's their responsibility. Do you see how that takes lots of pressure off of you? And I've let God take a lot of pressure off of my life because I used to have to prove it. And if somebody showed that they didn't quite believe this, and I had to keep driving and keep driving, sometimes to the point of ridiculousness, admittedly. Now, my responsibility that God's given me is to study His Word, to try to present it in the very best way that I can with the right attitude, and to try to reinforce that by living that. That's my responsibility. What you do with that is between you and God. You with me? And so I'm recommending that you take that approach to life. You can't make somebody do something, and if it is within your power to make that person acknowledge that or do that, don't make them. Now, I'm not talking about a child. You have to enforce things on a child. I'm talking about an adult person. Don't make somebody do something if it's within your power to do it. You know why? Because as soon as you lose that power, and someday you will, in some way or other, they're going to do what they wanted to anyway. And it's not going to be good for either one of you. You know, a husband says to me, make my wife do so-and-so. I said, what do you want me to do? You want me to hold her for you? What do you want me to do? What is it that you want? How do you want me to make her do this? How good is that for you? If I make your wife or if I make your husband, I don't have the ability or the power over that person to make them anyway. But if I did and I did make them, is that good? If you filled the church yet with people that were not truly converted, but somebody had just pressed them into a corner until they finally threw their hands up because they were tired of hearing you, and they finally said, yeah, okay. If you filled the church yet with people like that, what kind of church would you have? Church is made of people whose hearts have been converted, who have looked at the evidence, and they've examined it, and they have said, this is right. This is the way I want to go with my life. And that's us. And so we're here helping each other. We're studying God's Word, trying to get closer and closer to the Lord every day of our lives. And as we look at this, one of the principles that will make an incredible difference in your life is to realize you can't be good enough to go to heaven. And then the good part, that would be bad news. The good news is you don't have to be. Let that soak in. And if you ever get to the point that you recognize that's not how I'm going to get to heaven, is by being good enough. If I get to heaven, it's going to be because God has made me righteous. He gave me His righteousness as a gift, and He put it on me like a suit of clothes. And now I want to live righteously because He loved me that much, that even while I was still a sinner, He gave me His righteousness. And not only did He take care of my past sins, as we saw last week, He's taking care of my sins right now. Blessed is the man to whom the Lord will never, what? Impute his sin. Ain't that the truth? If that don't make you happy, I don't know how to make you happy. If that doesn't take some pressure off your life. Now, I know that some of you are still struggling, as you well should be, with letting that be real in your life. Because it sounds too good to be true, and our mind races, and we start saying, well, then if that's true, then so-and-so. Well, make sure that your conclusions are accurate, okay? And we'll talk about that. And we touched on it last time some, and we'll touch on it some more. But at this point, his premise is We maintain that a man is justified by faith apart from observing law. Now, he wants to prove that. He wants to give evidence of that. And it'll be up to you whether or not it proves it. He's going to use Abraham as an example. Now, I'm covering territory that Eric covered a couple of weeks ago. So I'm going to skim across it and remind you of what he had to say. Why does he choose Abraham as an illustration that man is justified by faith apart from observing law? Why would he choose Abraham? Yes, ma'am. Okay, what was Abraham in Genesis chapter 12? When we're introduced into Abram, what was he? Was he a Jew? There were no Jews. He was an Aramean. He was a Gentile Aramean, and God picked him. Why? I don't know why. After him. Okay. Was it because Abraham was more righteous than anybody else on earth? I don't know that. If you assume that, then you can assume that. You see some pretty serious mistakes, don't you, that he made. I mean, he had some character flaws, didn't he? And you know what? I'm glad he did. If he hadn't had any, then his example wouldn't give me much hope. But I'm telling you, some of the things he did, and the way that I would feel about somebody if I knew they did that today, I wouldn't have a lot of respect for him. Would you? If he was willing to give his wife up, not just once, but twice. And evidently, the first time, but particularly the second time, she lived in that situation for quite some time. And so he's assuming the worst, you know, and yet he gave her up to save his own hide, didn't he? Yes, ma'am. That's right. And so we conclude from that, there were no great men. There's a great God. Really, the Old Testament's not a story about great men. It's a story about a great God who took really weak men and accomplished his purpose with them. And you know what? That's still the storyline. Thank you, Jesus. That's still the storyline. There are no great men. Really. There's a great God. And there are some men who are capable of trusting that God completely. And that's the story. That's the beginning and the end. If you have enough evidence that God will do what he says he will do, if you can implement that enough in your life that you just say, okay, God, if you said it, that's the way I'm going to live. I'm going to base my life on that. Yes, sir.
Romans 15:4, very important, because it says things that are written aforetime are written for our learning if we might have hope. So our hope comes from the Old Testament.
That's right.
We'll never understand the New Testament if we don't understand the Old Testament.
That's right. And to find out, how were people saved under the old law? Were they saved by the law? They weren't saved by the law. Were they saved under the law? Yeah. But not by the law. How were they saved? By grace through faith, apart from works of law. They were saved the same way. That's not what we've been taught. And so that takes a while for us to get our thinking around that. And you know, in all of this, when you get to thinking, one of the things that you're going to think as you are mulling this over and trying to decide if you believe this or not, and look at the evidence and so forth. One of the things you're going to think is, you know what, this is too easy. Any of you had that thought? It's too easy. After you've been trying to earn your salvation and be good enough, you think, you know, I don't know if this could be true or not. This is too easy. Let me say this to you to temper that just a little bit. Remember Romans chapter 4 when we get through studying it. Remember Abraham's faith and then tell me it's easy. When God said, take your son, your only begotten son, the son whom you love, and take him to a mount that I'll show you, and kill him. Easy? I think you might want to rethink that. What does God want from us? And I want you to know this, and I'll say this, if I, my memory doesn't fail me, when we get through chapter 4. When you stop and you think about Abraham's faith, don't put it up here on a pedestal somewhere as if that's something that you'll never attain, because that's the kind of faith God's looking for from you and from me, that we trust him that much. And the Bible says, and when God saw his faith, he counted it to him as righteousness. It wasn't righteousness, but he counted it to him as righteousness. He said, because you trust me that much, because now I know and you know that you trust me that much, here's my righteousness as a gift. I'll put it on you. And I'll take care of your past, present, and future sins as long as you live by faith, as long as you keep walking that way. You don't have anything to worry about. Can a person lose their salvation under this? They can, by going back to law, by deliberately, continually, habitually practicing sin. But let me say this to you. Can you lose your salvation? Yes, you can. But it's hard. It's not as easy as you think to lose it. In fact, there has to be something in your life that means more to you than God and salvation does before you can lose it. But if there is something in your life, father or mother, son or daughter, houses or land, that means more to you than being righteous in God's sight, you will lose it. You will. Because the devil's going to make sure that you come to a point in your life where you have to make a choice. And you're going to choose the one where you, that's closest to your heart. And if it's your money and your job and your house and your family, and then you're going to, that's what you're going to choose over God. And you're not going to be walking by faith anymore. Now that puts it in perspective, folks. And so what we really need to be helping each other do is put that as the priority of our life. To trust God, listen to him, and walk by faith. That's what this, that's what Romans is about. That's what the whole Bible is about. To bring you to not just some faith, but keep increasing that faith and increasing that faith. And that's what, I don't know if any of this, I don't know if I'm accomplishing anything or not, but that's my goal for you, and that's my goal for me. That's why I preach the sermons that I preach and try to get across the things that I want to get across. And I don't know how effectively I'm doing that. That's up to you. I can't do it for you. All I can do is the best that I know how, but I want you to trust God. I want you to trust God so that you would give your life, so that you would give your family. If that was the cost, because that's where our security lies. That's how we continue to receive God's righteousness as a gift. Yes, sir. He was blessed. Yeah. And you know, people use that as an illustration on both sides. And my line is, he was still a son when he was in a foreign country, but he had already received all the inheritance he was going to. He had already claimed his inheritance, and he wanted what he had coming right now, and God gave it to him. And he had no more coming. And so he was a son who was away from the father's house who had nothing more coming. And it's by his father's grace that he was accepted back, wasn't it? There was somebody, I saw a hand over. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
That's right.
God,
yeah.
And
and our growth, our faith growth, comes in spurts. It does. How many of you were impressed with the letters and the attitude of Sergei and Anastasia? Okay? You know, I'm talking about the Belarusian couple that lost their first children before they were born, the twins. By the way, the bulletin next week, Lord willing, will have one more letter from Sergei and Anastasia. He wrote me a letter, got it yesterday. He wanted to thank all of you that you do not even know him, and yet you wrote to encourage he and Anastasia. And he made a comment. If I had it, I'd read it to you. I'd steal my thunder, but you'd have to wait till next week. But he made a statement of how thankful he was that you didn't try to correct his theology. I mean, he said some things about, you know, I know God could raise the dead even now. You gave these children life, and you could give them life back again. And he said, you didn't try to correct my theology. You just gave me love. And so you'll get to read that next, Lord willing, next Sunday as the front of the newsletter, bulletin. So you can look forward to that. But isn't that an encouragement to see someone, here's a young couple, don't have any children, were so excited about having twins, and then they found out that those twins were dead in the womb. And the way that they have handled that, boy, that's one of the things. That is an application of what we're talking about. I mean, most people in the world would have no reason to be anything other than bitter and angry and hostile about this whole thing. But they take a different, completely different tact on it, as we all do as Christians. But it takes some getting there, doesn't it? It doesn't happen overnight. And we're here for one another. And we're studying God's word to put that in our hearts so that we can act that way when things come into our life. And we don't act like people in the world who have no hope. But that hope makes a real difference in our lives, every moment of our lives. So, we didn't get anywhere progress in our study, but we'll get there. And by the way, for those of you that don't know, I'm only trying to get through the first 8 chapters. It's looking less likely I'm going to get through all 8 of them now, but anyway, we're trying to get through. Thank you. We'll pick up there next week. Lord willing.